Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze, and on today's show, we're celebrating an amazing milestone for Cutting the Curd founder and overlord, Ann Saxelby. That you just celebrated your 10-year anniversary of Saxelby Cheesemongers. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for always for coming on the show, Ann. For those listeners who may never have heard of Saxelby Cheesemongers, there might be a couple of them out there. Can you give us an overview of what Saxelby Cheesemongers is, what you guys do?
Sure, yeah. So we, Saxelby Cheesemongers, we bill ourselves as, I don't even know our tagline anymore, purveyors of fine American farmstead cheese. And we aim to be farmstead whenever possible and 100% honesty. You know, it's not all farmstead cheese, but we do work with about 50 local producers at this point to bring really awesome American cheeses to both retail consumers and now restaurants in New York City. And we also, in 2011, added a line of French cheeses from Hervé Mons that is just for our wholesale customers. So, wholesale, retail, and that's about it. Yeah.
Saxelby Cheesemongers is an amazing little business. I've known you since the beginning when we worked together in the Essex market, me very, very briefly. You're the first store in first shop in America in the United States, New York City to focus solely on American cheese. And I imagine the landscape of American cheese has changed a lot in the 10 years that you've been around. I think you're on the forefront of helping to really jumpstart another revolution of liking the American cheese.
Yeah, well, it was really interesting. I mean, when I opened in 2006, I mean, my passion was kind of always, was cheese, and then kind of like got dialed in more specifically to American cheese, largely, I guess, for two reasons, because I was able to live up at Cato Corner Farm in Connecticut and intern with those guys for a little while after I graduated from college. I lived up there for about 6 months and learned to make cheese and really that, you know, learned about eating seasonally, learned about what it is to run a small farm, and learned about like all the cool, weird, and I say this in the most like loving way possible, you know, awesome people out there who were kind of like bucking whatever trend to decide to make great artisan cheese. And I was just like, wow, like I love all these cheeses. I love all the people behind these cheeses. And so just kind of really fell in love with the whole movement and kind of just took it upon myself to start like going around and visiting people and learning from them and seeing how and why and what they did. I found that, you know, offering to scrub cheese vats was often a good way to gain access for a day. You know,
taking out the trash.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm good at dishes. I'm good at cleaning, and in a cheese plant, that goes a long way. So I was fortunate in that I got to visit some really great farms, and just kind of educate myself about what was going on in American cheese. And so when I found my little stall in the Essex market, you know, thinking about opening a business, I was kind of like, oh, you know, there's so many things that you could potentially do. But when I found this little 100 square foot stall, I was like, okay, this is a really perfect place for me to test drive this idea
low risk
of doing, you know, all American, because at that time, not quite as high profile as European cheeses. Oftentimes much more expensive than European cheeses. That's kind of swung back and forth over the years as the euro has kind of gone up and down in value in relation to the dollar. But when I opened, American cheese was like very expensive, and just a little bit more rarefied. But it was, I feel like, you know, in the end, that's what has differentiated us and what has kind of made us special.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing, and kudos to you for, like, you hung on a long time in the market. I mean, I was there in the Essex market, which is not what it was. It wasn't what it is now when Saxelby first opened. It was a different kind of place. Smelled different, looked different. There was different business transactions were always going on in
Yes.
Some of a semi-legal or highly illegal nature. And I mean, I sold a Comté in there, and people were like, "What the hell is this?" I mean, they liked it when they tasted it. You know, and you know, some of the vendors were like, "What are you doing here, dude? Like, we don't sell this kind of stuff." But like, were people into it right from the very beginning?
I feel like, yeah, it is interesting. I mean, thinking about, like, yeah, we both opened. I think you opened in 2006 too with Essex cheese in there, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, it's just so funny. In 2006, so Essex, us, and then Formaggio Essex also opened,
right?
Because Daphne Zeppos had approached
Eason
and said, "Hey, you should open a cheese shop in here." So all of a sudden, the Essex market went from being kind of, you know, a little grungy, you know, public market, like mostly focused on, like, you know, Hispanic produce and meat and some,
which, like, was great. You could get like great goat meat in there and all kinds of stuff, but like the back corner kind of smelled kind of funky in there.
That was the tailor. He was incontinent. He really was.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Mr. Smith. He was a nice guy, but definitely stinky. But no,
there was a lot of police activity around the bathrooms.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Yeah, totally. Between the double doors, like, you know,
wow.
In front of my shop, I became like the vigilante, like, police woman myself. There's a methadone clinic across the street.
I think
there might even be two. And
there are right upstairs from that McDonald's.
Right. Yeah. They're,
I visit them all the time.
Yeah. They're not very well marked, but if you know where they are or where they're at. No, but so people would go to the methadone clinic, and then they'd basically come to this little diner next to my shop, which is now Shopson's, but at the time was not Shopson's. And
it used to be a cheap rice and beans joint. It was awesome.
Their food was great. It was called Montalvo Luchonette or something like that.
I feel
that.
Like they were open like 3 hours a day.
They're open 3 hours a day. They sold dollar cups of rice and beans.
Yeah.
And they served this crazy stew called sancocha that, like, everybody, people would literally, like, line up for that stuff. And I tried it once or twice, but I mean, wow, that stuff was intense. There was all kinds of weird, like, organ meat. I think there was tripe in it.
There was.
Which I was just, I'm not a tripe person. I like most things, but yeah. Anyways, the people, I would, you know, there would be like a sort of a peanut gallery that were half real customers of Montalvo and half people who were hanging out after the methadone stuff. And, you know, they'd kind of be like, falling asleep and then waking up and then yelling at each other and then, like, talking really loudly because they all had, like, their earphones in, but,
sure,
you know, arguments and, oh yeah, I was witness to all kinds of drama. But yeah, those were good times.
You were right there in the corner selling Strauss Creamery butter and good yogurt and eggs and cheese from, you know, Cato Corner Farm at $35 a pound. And and you lasted. So I mean, you really did great there.
Well, I guess, yeah. So it's funny. I guess it's like easy to think of like the funny, ridiculous Essex market stories, but I feel like, you know, the other part of the neighborhood and kind of the city in general was just, you know, the neighborhood had kind of an interesting mix of, like, you know, the Lower East Side has been gentrifying, you know, forever. But it's still very, like, diverse. And I feel like the people who lived there when I opened the shop there was kind of this group of, like, artsy bohemian types who were, like, really into food and, like, you know, maybe they didn't, like, make a lot of money, like, at their job, but, like, they were, like, self-supporting artists, but, like, they really wanted to support good food and local business.
Sure.
And so, like, those were our first customers, as well as, I would call them, like, the food safarians, you know, like, they would kind of on the weekends, people would go around to all their favorite shops and, like, you know, check out what was new. And at that time, you know, nobody else really had a lot of the cheeses that we had. So, you know, it wasn't like you'd go to Whole Foods and buy a slice of Vermont Shepherd.
No.
like you can now. So it was, you know, sort of dedicated, you know, cheese nerds. And again, in the best possible sense of the word. So it's kind of started with them. And then, you know, chefs kind of started to come and ask around and say, hey, like, oh, hey, could we get some cheese for our cheese plate? And I always remember one of my favorite, like, early days tastings was with this woman, Molly Kaplan, who was the cheese buyer for Gramercy Tavern at the time. She was so awesome, so nice. And she came down to the shop, and I was, like, really excited, obviously, and flattered that Gramercy Tavern was interested in buying cheese from us. And so here Molly and I sitting at the table, literally next to the Methodonians, who were, like, kind of sleeping slash having
their lunch. Methodonians.
Yes. And we were, like, eating cheese and talking about it. And yeah, it was really funny. It was really funny.
But Gramercy, they're like a venerable cheese board that has been around longer than a lot of the other restaurants. They had a cheese program, I want to say, before a lot of people that I knew of that had a cheese program, a real one, in restaurants in the city. You know, now there are much more. And, you know, shops like Saxelby help that out because chefs are always looking for just little bits of cheese, you know, little bits of cheese. And I think, you know, any place that any distributor is not going to work with you like a shop like Saxelby does. And you were definitely on the cusp of a big push of gentrification in the Lower East Side, which I saw partially while I was there. And then after I left the city for 5 years and came back, and the neighborhood was like unrecognizable to me. But I mean, what was your biggest challenge in getting them to purchase from you? Was it the money? Was it the selection? What do you think it was?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, there were like all the challenges. I feel like I was just like, you know, I was just me though behind the counter, and I'm like very friendly and very persistent. And I feel like I would just like stand there and literally smile at every person that walked in the door. And like, if they even like remotely made eye contact with me, I was like, hey, you want to try some cheese? Sure. Like, come on over here, you know?
You fed them.
It was very funny in like stark contrast to my business partner, Benoit, who's like very reserved and French. You know, I remember like elbowing him like in the ribs like the first couple of days and just being like, hey, no, you just gotta like, yeah, you just gotta like talk to people and like, you know, just like, yeah, like foist yourself upon them and ask them if they want a sample of something and blah, blah, blah. But literally that's kind of how it was. You just like, and again, that's like why I really love cheese in general. It's just like education through taste. People don't have to know about how cheese is made or what is, you know, what are all the minutiae that make it great. But just by tasting it, you can tell it's something special and awesome. So that we just kind of tried to educate through taste.
Yeah, a simple process. I think another thing that that benefits Saxelby and what will always benefit people who act such as you is that you came about in a time where there were not a lot of small cheese shops, you know, So you dealt with people in a certain way that wasn't available to them through other businesses. You know what I mean?
Sure. Or like at a larger like Dean and DeLuca or like grocery store where there would be like maybe a lot of pre-wrap stuff and like a little bit of a cheese counter. But the interaction and the education isn't quite the same.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And you got in there when the rents were cheap, which is good, you know, because the rents aren't cheap anymore.
Yeah, no, they're certainly not as reasonable as when I opened, for sure. I feel like they're still probably more reasonable than opening up a storefront, you know, on the Lower East Side, but also because your square footage is so small.
Yeah, it's a closet.
But exactly. A closet, phone booth, some tiny submarine. But I was going to say another interesting thing about when we opened is that I think in the summer of 2006, that's also when The Omnivore's Dilemma came out by Michael Pollan. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, you know, I feel like, I don't know, business is hard work, but also like a little bit of luck and good timing.
100%.
And so we were kind of at the crest of this wave of people kind of all of a sudden being like, whoa, like our food system is really messed up. Like, what's going on? Like, I want to feed myself better. I want to feed my kids better. You know, Omnivore's Dilemma, I think that movie Food Inc. came out that same year. And so I feel like because we were so focused on the local stuff and on the relationships with the producers and kind of knowing who made the cheese and what went into it, that also was a big bonus for us starting.
And then, so obviously, you know, you guys were successful because then you had to open up a storage facility, a cheese cave of sorts, right? When did that come about?
So that came about in 2000. We actually opened it in 2011, but we got the idea for it in 2009. Benoit, my business partner, and I were on a trip with Jason Hines of Neil's Yard Dairy. We went to Bra, the big slow food cheese festival that year, and it was an awesome trip. We started off in France. Jason picked us up in France in his Volvo with the wheel on the wrong side.
Yeah, that freaked me out. I've been in that car before.
And we drove through France, through Switzerland, to Italy for this conference, and then back through France to stay with Hervé at his cheese caves for a bit, and then back to England. And then when we were in England, we went back to Neil's Yard Dairy, of course, and went to see Joe Schneider making Stichelton. And so we were kind of observing, you know, all these business models along the way because we got to see, you know, Neil's Yard and
Mons, the Arches, and Cravero, the railroad cave in Mons. You saw everything, right?
Exactly. And so we're kind of thinking like, okay, well, we're outgrowing our little store and like, what does the next phase look like? And so while we weren't quite at the point where we were ready to renovate an old railway tunnel and go all in like that, we're like, okay, we do need a smallish, you know, warehouse where we can base our wholesale operation out of. So we opened our warehouse in Red Hook in 2011, and we do call it a cave, although that's like not quite true. We've got a very large walk in there, and there are no windows. So in that way, it is kind of cave like. But, you know, the next iteration, hopefully, we'll have more ability to actually age cheese also. But I guess over the years, we've seen the core of the business shift. You know, when we opened, we were 100% retail and then probably 90% retail, 10% wholesale. Now we're 90% wholesale, 10% retail. So it's really kind of, you know, flipped.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the future of Saxby Cheesemongers.
All right.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, "Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA." Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, and as it stands, I forgot to mention something very important that was born out of Saxelby Cheesemongers, which is Cutting the Curd.
Oh, yeah.
So, something I personally am very happy about.
Me too.
So, how did Saxelby Cheesemongers make Cutting the Curd? How did that happen?
Well, so that's a funny story. So, we're sitting in this little radio shipping container here at Roberta's.
Best place on earth.
And so Heritage Radio started in 2009, and Patrick, who's now my husband, started Heritage Radio Network, and he started with just like a handful of shows. He basically called all of his friends and was like, hey, I'm going to start this radio station. Great. In the back of Roberta's, like, you should come do a show. So at that time, Zach Palaccio had a show called Urban Foragers or something like that. And so he had both myself and Rhonda Cave, who owns Ronnie Sue's Chocolates in the Essex Market,
yeah,
out to the...
They sell the bacon-covered... Chocolate-covered bacon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to eat that anymore.
Yeah.
I went to a therapist to get me to remove the thought of that out of my mind.
All right, well, we'll strike it from the record. Strike it from the record. I'm sorry to put your therapy in relapse. No, but... So we came out here one afternoon, and it was really funny because I remember it was a Wednesday, and it was like a really busy day at the shop because at that time we were doing wholesale and regular store stuff out of
right
the shop.
Out of the little space.
Yeah, and it was just like a nutty day, and I remember being in the car with Zach's girlfriend, Jory, and Rhonda, and I was like, why the hell am I coming out here? I was like, I'm so busy. I definitely can't do this. But so then I was like, and where the hell am I? Because at that time, I mean,
sure.
Yeah, Bushwick, I mean, it's still very industrial, but like even more so back then.
Yeah.
So
you could actually get hurt around here.
Yeah. 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 Totally. So we pulled up and I was just like, where are we going? What is this place? And we come in and we do the show and it was really fun. And of course, like I got not grumpy like immediately and I was like, this is so weird and cool. I love it. And Patrick just like happened to be coming by that day and he was like, oh, he's like, well, you know, we really want to have a cheese show on the radio network. And I was like, yeah, right. Like thinking to myself, like, mm-hmm. Like, I definitely don't have time for that. And like, I'm an overcommitter and no way.
Not you.
But then what I said, of course, was, sure, yeah, let's go out for a beer and talk about it. And, you know, so there I was. I wound up with a radio show and a husband, you know.
Nice.
And now two kids. So, you
know. Sweet.
Yeah.
And those two kids, I was a beneficiary of those two kids because now you have no time so I can host this wonderful radio show.
And now I know you've like totally taken it to the next level, which is so awesome. Which is so awesome. But
many good things born out of Saxelby Cheese. Many, many good things. And that's an amazing little story. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, and cutting the curd, it was so fun. I remember my grandpa Ray really liked the name of the show. We were trying to come up with
it's perfect
with names, and he decided, yeah, he that was his favorite. So I went with his favorite. Yeah, it was also like a really fun way to stay connected, as I'm sure you think too. You know, it's like you,
yes,
you kind of keep educating yourself, and you stay connected to the cheese community at large. And
I learn and meet so many people, either here or you know, over the phone. But I think that the best part of for me of doing this is the learning that I get to do, you know?
Totally.
It's just talking to all the cheesemakers who, you know, are busy, but then they take time to come on the show, you know, and that's a special thing for me to be able to be a part of, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, how long have you been in the cheese business?
For a long time.
Right. And so I feel like you never, it's like, it's totally awesome and amazing that even though, you know, you've been doing it for however many years and I've been doing it since like, for like 13 years, since 2003, you know, it's like, you still like are learning so much all the time. It's awesome.
Well, when you mentioned, you know, that about the food system and knowing or becoming aware, people becoming aware that what they eat, what they put in their bodies was being manipulated and that they're, was a problem that needed to be fixed. You know, I mean, when I started, I've been very lucky in the work that I've done because I've always been able to work for people and with people that don't advertise as much that they're helping that food system, but we do the work, you know?
Right.
And like say, like, you know, it's hard to, when you take those jobs where you're really busy and you work all of the time, you sell a lot of cheese or you do that, sell a lot of food in general, you don't get a lot of time to pause and speak about what you do or, you know, or put it out there. And cutting the curd definitely keeps me aware that the job that we do as cheesemongers is important as because it helps us a little bit to change the food system in a positive way. And it keeps a way of life that we like, you know, going, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Keeps the bad stuff at bay. So that's a lot of great stuff and a lot of pioneering, a lot of hard work, and interesting stories. And here you are, you got 10 years. So then did you ever think you'd get to 10 years?
I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean, only because, like, I had no plan B, you know? I was kind of like, well, this is the only thing that I want to do. Like, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to be screwed. And I'm going to really have to, like,
about 15 years into cheesemongery, that was my take on it. I was like, well, there's nothing else for me in life. I better roll with this.
Exactly. And, no, I've always, like, really idolized, like, certain like food businesses in New York, like Sahadi's on Atlantic Avenue, and Russ and Daughters, and you know, all these like real, like these generational businesses. They just, and you know, Shopsins, you know, my buddies who are now in the market. I've always like had a really like special place in my heart for these businesses that have just kind of persevered and made it happen and kind of just stick to their guns and like keep doing what they're doing, you know? And so, I think from the beginning, that was my goal and kind of vision for Saxby Cheesemongers.
It's great. And it's true. It's funny because there's no grand plan, you know, in these food businesses. I don't care. I've been in enough of them. And you realize like when a larger element, like a large corporate element comes in, just fucks it all up because it just never becomes the same. But it's hard to, you know, you grow a family. They're going to work at the business. Like what makes it sustainable? We talk to cheese makers about that stuff on the show quite often, you know, and those businesses like Russ and Daughters, they rely on kids to be made, which you've done that, you know, and just pushing through a lot of BS and a lot of hard work, you know what I mean?
And like having, I don't know, and then having the kind of gumption and just like courage to take it to another era. Because Russ and Daughters now, I mean, it's just so cool to see what they're doing. Like, they've opened up at the Jewish Museum.
Yeah.
They're opening up a commissary in the Navy Yard. And they're really taking what was, you know, a push cart.
It's a fish stand. Yeah.
It was a push cart, a fish stand on the Lower East Side that then grew up into a venerable storefront, which then, you know, grew up into this kind of next phase. And it's just so cool.
Well, they're smart because their products are good and they're still, they've reached iconic status. So they represent their city. They represent the things that they sell and the people that come from. That's why they can go to the museum and people understand that why they're there. You know?
That's true.
And while they'll do well. And you know, hopefully you'll be able to do that too. And so what's the next step for Saxby Cheesemongers? You said that now your business is swung the other way. You do little retail, a lot of wholesale. What's going to happen next?
So, well, I guess, you know, for us, the next thing is kind of thinking about two things. The first is I guess they kind of are both going to happen around the same time, but the Essex market is going to move into a new home in 2018, which is really exciting. We're, you know, I've kind of like gone through like all the phases with it, like anger, denial, rejection, like frustration.
Acceptance? You had acceptance yet?
I think I'm at acceptance, yeah, because, you know, it's just, I think there are certainly things that can be bettered and changed about the market. And, you know, I've been kind of, you know, working on that as like another job with the other vendors. But, you know, so the market's going to move across the street into a new home in 2018. Basically, I feel like the market is really special, but right now it's just not as visible publicly. Like literally the building looks like a crazy shed that could be like a prison, you know?
Yeah.
And it takes a very kind of intrepid person to like figure out what's in there and go inside. And
when I first walked by that building in 1997, it says Essex Street Retail Market, and someone had removed some of the signs at that time, and it said Sex Street Tail Market.
And I'm sure that's exactly some of the trade that was being plied inside. Oh, my God. So, yeah, but, you know, it's going to be this, like, brand new facility. There's this whole redevelopment happening on the Lower East Side. All those empty parking lots on the south side of Delancey Street are going to be redeveloped. And it was, you know, of course, with any development comes contention within the community and people don't like developers and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But I think that the community really reached a good kind of balance of things that developers want and things that the community wants with this whole thing. So the Essex Market is basically going to be the cornerstone of this whole new project.
That's fantastic.
And
you've been a part of that, right? You created something else. You created an association of vendors in the Lower East Side. Are you a part of that, correct?
Yep. And I'm the chairperson of the Essex Market Vendor Association.
That's great.
So that's like another hat. But we felt that, you know, the vendors...
You don't sleep much, do you?
Yeah, not as much as I'd like to, but it's okay. I'll catch up. But yeah. But so it's going to be, you know, the vendors in the market like needed a voice and needed a place in this new development. And so because of our involvement and the city wanted to keep the market and the community wanted to keep the market. So it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be, you know, this big glass building. You know, I know people have problems with big glass buildings, but for someone who doesn't have, you know, it's like a brick shed right now.
Who are these people?
Well, you know, people in general. I feel like whenever you see a new glass tower go up in New York City, it's the first thing everybody wants to shit on, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But for me, I'm excited because I'm like, oh my God, people are going to walk by the market and they're going to be able to see what's inside, which is going to be awesome.
New Yorkers are really oddly, and in my long time here, very oddly territorial about like just about everything, even though half of us, I would say most of us that I know weren't born here. You know what I mean? We live here for a fluctuating amount of time, but like total shit neighborhoods will be out there and people are like, someone will knock down something that has nothing. There's nothing there. It's garbage. It's blight. And then they're going to put up something. And everybody's like, oh, there goes the neighborhood. And I'm just like, yeah, they're going to move that trash pile. That's going to suck for everybody. But I mean,
totally. Or, yeah. In the case of the market, it's like we're going to build on these empty lots that were raised by Robert Moses in 1967 to build like affordable housing and get and never got done. So, yeah, no, it's a whole other can of worms. But Mark Israel, the owner of the donut plant, he has my favorite quote on this issue because he was like, in New York, he's like, history starts from the moment you moved into the neighborhood.
Yeah, sure.
And no, I think Mark. It's so funny because it's totally true. You know, people have a real sense of ownership. But
his business grew out of there, too. I remember buying donuts from him when he would deliver them to Dean and DeLuca in his bicycle. Like, and they were like, he had like three flavors or something like that, or four flavors.
He's awesome.
Anyway, I'm sorry. So you're going to move into the new building.
So we're going to move into the new building. And I want to stress to all of our listeners and everybody out there that the market is not closing in between now and then. It's going to be open for business. They're going to build the new building. When it's ready, they're going to move everyone over in the span of a few days. That's great. We're not going to have to be closed. The market will just kind of continue. And our space is going to be bigger.
I think that's going to help your retail business grow?
Yeah, I think the market's going to be a real destination, and we're excited to kind of be a part of that. So that's exciting. And then in the next couple of years, we're going to move to a larger cheese cave that will be more of an actual cave where we can do some aging and things.
Sure.
And grow the wholesale and mail order business as well, because we do a tiny, teeny bit of mail order, but that's something that we want to do more of.
So. Those are a big deal. I mean, for a small business, managing those areas. How many employees do you have now?
Right now we have five. Five
full-time
employees.
That's not a lot of employees.
It's not a lot of employees. Yeah, yeah.
And is that a lot? Is that a lot for you?
No. God, I wish we had. Well, I wish we had more, but, you know, then we're kind of like, okay, well, we want everyone to have a job to do, of course, and we want, and of course, as any organization grows, it becomes more kind of complex and complicated and challenging. So five seems to be, you know, like lean and mean, very lean and mean right now, but I think we're poised to grow a bit more over these next couple of years and get some more folks on board.
When you started, so you're 10 years, you have five employees after 10 years. How many employees would you say roughly you have lost in 10 years?
Lost?
No, not lost, but have grown. Like, how many people have come through Saxelby Cheesemongers in 10 years?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's see. Veronica Pedraza was our first full-time employee. She is now cheesemaker
making
at Meadowwood
cheese.
Farm.
Yep. Right.
Katrina Rezinale was our, I think, second full-time employee, and she is now at Jasper Hill Farm doing their mail order. Let's see. We've had a number of people. Yeah, I feel like the lifespan of like someone who's working in retail and like kind of a cheesemonger or managerial position, it's only so long. When you're in, and especially if you're in a small company where, you know, there's
someone
not like
told me that.
10 jobs to grow
right,
into,
right, right.
You know.
Right.
But that said, I feel like we've had a lot of really awesome people and we've gotten to educate a lot of great people, and it's been cool to see what they've done afterwards.
Yeah, when you have a business that's that small, but it reaches that many people, everybody's got to do everything, and they learn a lot. That's what I've realized.
Definitely.
From working in businesses that are that small. Now I'm in a business that's larger, different challenges, but it's the same thing. You know, you still have to do you got to do everything, and you lose people, but it's great to see them grow, right?
Yeah, and in New York, I feel like the cheese community is still like a small and close-knit one. You know, so you wind up, you know, keeping in touch, which is cool.
That's amazing. Well, thanks so much, Anne, for coming on, and thank you for everything you do and have done for our industry. And here's to the next 10 years, to many more episodes of Cutting the Curd, your brainchild that has brought so much to my life personally and professionally. Thank you very much, and tune in next week for more Cutting the Curd.
Thank you, Greg.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.